Hi, how are y'all doing? It's a beautiful summer Monday in New York City. Evan and Tiki. Tiki's on assignment today. Like, when Tiki doesn't do a show during the summer, he's never on vacation. He's never doing anything like hanging on a beach or just drinking wine. Like, he's doing work. So his work today is related to the NFL, and we'll pepper him with questions tomorrow when he's back with us when we're at Jets camp. Good to be back. Good to have Sean back.
Good to be back.
Good to see your beautiful, shining face. Good to see everybody. Good to talk New York sports, because I don't know if you guys feel this way, and I know my kids are probably in the car right now, and they're listening to Daddy talk on the radio, and what I'm about to say, I mean with love. Vacation is not vacation. Coming to work is vacation. Now, I shouldn't say that out loud, but that's the damn truth. Because when you go on vacation with your children, you're working.
Oh, yes, you are.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I got a whole car ride to Lake George on tap next week that I know exactly what you're talking about.
So when anyone says, hey, welcome back from vacation, it's like, no, I'm back on vacation. Now we're going to bitch about the Mets, Yankees, and Malik Nabers. I mean, it's a completely different world. And we do have a very busy show today. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, old friend Craig Carton to analyze how he did as the Yankee play-by-play voice. We'll also play you some clips coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. I think Tommy and Sean want to fight about something. We'll get to that later. Look, I think it's obvious that the New York Mets had a disappointing West Coast trip. I think that goes without saying, and we will get to that here in the opening of the show. But I also think the Yankees had a disappointing homestand. Let's not forget, the Yankees, while the Mets were away, played bad teams. The Toronto Blue Jays, bad team.
Mm-hmm.
The Angels of Anaheim, despite their success recently, bad team. The Texas Rangers, I wouldn't say bad team, I'd say mediocre team. This was a chance, and it obviously continues tonight, to beat up on bad teams. And what I find so perplexing and why I would label what we just witnessed a disappointment is that Aaron Judge is Aaron Judge. Juan Soto's on fire. Austin Wells has been the perfect cleanup hitter when he cleans up. Giancarlo Stanton is back. Like, Jazz Chisholm still hits home runs every few days. Carlos Rodon looks good. Gerrit Cole came back and looked good till he was pulled. And yet, they went 5-4 against crappy teams.
Yeah, Evan, I hate to be this guy and I hate to make excuses, but I'm going to make excuses. The two doubleheaders killed him. They absolutely killed him. It's the truth, though. It absolutely killed
him. Because you can't sweep doubleheaders?
You can sweep doubleheaders, but the way the Yankees operate, look, Giancarlo, you just mentioned, who got red hot, he had to sit in each a game in each one of those doubleheaders. Will Warren basically gave him no shot that first go-around versus the Angels. Now, after you take Gerrit Cole out, you should be winning that kind of baseball game on Saturday, and they didn't. But I think the disruptive week, to me, played more into the Yankees' problems than the Yankees themselves.
So you would not define this. And look, this doesn't mean it's the end of the world. I mean, the Yankees are still right there in the American League East. It's all right
in front
of them.
Best record of baseball.
That's right. I mean, which is amazing. But when you went into this 9-game stretch, I remember us talking about it on the air.
Mm-hmm.
We looked at this and said, this is your opportunity to get fat. This is your opportunity to beat up on crappy teams. And I think a lot of individuals are playing really, really well. And they still went 5-4 against Toronto, Anaheim, and Texas. It's not sounding the alarm bells. It's just an observation that this was a disappointing week if you're the Yankees.
Look, if the word is disappointing, there is no doubt about it. Despite the fact that you come here fresh on a Monday after winning 2 of 3 from Texas, the overall homestand is what you have to look at. I was calling them, the last debate I won with Lugie, the hottest team in baseball. I can't say that.
They're
after
not anymore.
The homestand. They're not the hottest team in baseball. But overall, I don't think it's as disastrous, and I refuse to believe that the record would have been 5-4 had they not had those doubleheaders. They probably lose the Texas game. It's probably somewhere like 6-3. I think they would have won that second game with the Angels. But nonetheless, it's disappointing. Now, what really bothers me is the fact that the Orioles continue to find ways to lose games, and here we are, despite the bad stretch of baseball the Yankees previously had, getting hot, then this recent homestand, they cannot gain any freaking ground.
Right.
You can never look up and go, they're a game and a half or two games up on Baltimore, despite Baltimore's problems, and I just can't help but wonder, with the Yankees not having that tiebreaker, if ultimately these kind of stretches of baseball are what the Yankees are going to rue when they go play Baltimore that final week of the year, if it comes down to it.
No, I think you hit on it, and that's why, look, the Yankees have it all right in front of them. I love that phrase.
Yeah.
Because it also works for the Mets, too, which we'll get to in a couple of minutes. Like, it is all right in front of them. They have an opportunity to beat up a historically bad Chicago White Sox team, and they still have a relatively soft schedule over the final month and a half of the season. But you're right in terms of taking advantage of the situation that they're in. I looked at this homestand. It's very different than the Mets. The Mets needed to survive this West Coast trip.
Yeah.
The Yankees needed to get fat. And what I find bizarre watching the Yankees right now, and I have had a lot of faith in them all season long. You've wavered a little bit. You've been like, I'm dead. I'm done. I quit. I'm back. We're going to win the World Series. We're not going to win the World Series. You've been all over the place like this bitch of a hurricane that hit all of us last week. All over the place. Because that thing's east, it's west, it's stopping.
I think it hit Montreal. Where did this thing go?
Montreal?
It boomeranged around everywhere. I looked up at one point. I said, we're getting the tail bottom of it.
What was her name again, by the way? Denny?
Debbie.
Oh, Debbie. Debbie was something else, man.
You have a lot of Aunt Denny's, Evan?
I passed a lot of Denny's driving back from North Carolina. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. They missed out on an opportunity. This was a chance to get fat. This was an opportunity to beat up on teams you're better than. And what's kind of tough to wrap my head around is that for a majority of the struggles that the Yankees had, when they were struggling for well over a month and a half, it was easy to pinpoint why. J.D. Davis is batting cleanup.
Yep.
Jamai Jones is leading off. They have too many easy outs.
Luis Severino said it. They only had two hitters, which hasn't been the case now.
It's not the case. Like, this is a completely different Yankee lineup. You feel even better about D.J. LeMahieu. Even Gleyber Torres has hit a little bit. Anthony Volpe obviously hasn't. You feel good about the cleanup spots. Soto and Judge continue to be monsters. You felt a lot better about Marcus Stroman yesterday. Like, there are so many things individually that are a lot better than what they were a month ago, and they still put together a stretch at home that was very disappointing.
Well, a lot of it is on the pitching. And yes, Stroman was better yesterday. By the way, they pulled the ripcord to make sure he didn't leave with a sour taste in his mouth, because his previous two starts, I believe both were on this homestand, right? Because he started, maybe only one of them, were awful. But the bullpen also continues, outside of Jake Cousins, to be a big, and I can't believe we're trusting Kirk Cousins' cousin, but outside of that, a big hold your breath moment. Even the balloon popped on Mark Leiter this weekend, too. So it's just what's up is down. Now they hit, and now the bullpen and the rotation continue to be problems, and they need to right that. Look, if this homestand was supposed to be get fat time, the Angels in a doubleheader proved to be their Ozempic. They just can't gain the weight.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Slid it in. And you didn't even see it was coming. No signal.
I did not see it coming. Now, as far as the Mets are concerned, that one's a lot more obvious for all of us. It was a disappointment. Now, when I left about a week and a half ago, I knew this wasn't going to be easy, which is why I was okay with 6-4, 5-5. The idea that this team was going to go out west, I don't care who they're facing, and go 8-2 was never going to be the thing.
Sure.
4-6 is a major disappointment. But what makes it to me an even bigger disappointment is that if the New York Mets are going to make the playoffs, and they better make the playoffs, like, I'm sorry. I love Joe B, longtime partner. When I heard Beningo, and he told me this a week ago, and then he said it on the air, you know what, bro? It's all house money. House money, my ass! If they don't make the playoffs, this would be a massive disappointment considering how far they came, considering the teams they're competing with. But I'll tell you why. More than 4-6, what we all witnessed over the last 3 days was a massive disappointment. Their identity is very simple. It's not that complicated. We don't need to take 100 phone calls figuring out what the Met identity is. It's their offense. That needs to be their strength. They do not have a great rotation. Do they not have a great bullpen? But they can score runs. You cannot, in a 3-game series, and don't give me this crap that Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller and Luis Castillo are the 95 Braves.
I mean, my God, that topic this weekend. How could you play? Look how good show me all the teams the Mariners have swept, shutting them out for basically three games.
Well, they just played the Tigers and they scored 13 runs in three games.
What a nonsensical attempt at rationalizing.
They're a good staff. No one's denying the Mariners don't have a really good pitching staff. They're not the Braves. They're not Johnson and Schilling. They're not Koufax and Drysdale to get shut out. And quite frankly, they were shut out for 3 games outside of Jeff McNeil's solo shot. That's the part that was so disappointing and concerning. Because if the Mets are going to make the playoffs, if they're going to be the team we fell in love with throughout late June and early July, it's going to be on the backs of an offense that scores run that doesn't get shut down and go 0-16 with runners in scoring position and score one run in 3 games. Can't happen.
And to me, that is the most concerning part. I don't even think 4-6 is a huge unmitigated disaster if they were going to get swept by the Mariners, which they did. It's the idea of how inept they looked offensively versus the Mariners.
Because that's their identity.
That's their strength. And obviously, I know it's soreness. You don't want to see Vientos scratched, anything like that. But really, Evan, the problem with losing 4-6, Thank God, by the way, they won that Cardinal game on that one-off. Because
it was
that's
a big game, yeah.
Right, when you look at the tightness of the wild card race. They are about to set up, and I know we're going to get into plenty of this throughout the show, the Oakland-Miami series. After that, it gets damn difficult, including two teams that you're competing with in Arizona and San Diego. They went and turned that trip to 4-6 and looked inept. That offense better wake up quick, because I think you might be getting to a point this week, Evan, versus these two teams. Anything short of 5-1 feels like unacceptable.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think 4-2 is still good, but you're right. They have put themselves in a spot where they've got to go out and do serious damage on this homestand. And the only way they're going to do that is by scoring runs. Their starting pitching has been acceptable. It's been decent. Obviously, Sean Manaea had a great run until his recent start. Luis Severino was pitching really well until recently, though I did think his start last night was a lot better. Francisco Lindor screwed him with the defensive miscue in the sixth inning of this game, or the fifth inning of this game. But they've got to score runs.
Yeah.
That's the identity of the New York Mets. And it's on Pete Alonso to wake up. It's on J.D. Martinez to wake up, because those are the names specifically that jump out at me. Francisco Lindor had four or five hits in this series.
He's been fine. He's hitting every game.
He hasn't been a problem. Brandon Nimmo's been ice cold for basically 2 months, really since the All-Star break. But to me, it's about Pete and it's about J.D. Martinez. Who knows about Mark Vientos with this ankle issue he's dealing with? But what was concerning and what made this so massively disappointing wasn't 4-6 in particular. It was how it happened.
Yeah.
It's the fact that they didn't hit. And look, you mentioned the Orioles and how the Yankees weren't able to take advantage of the fact that the Orioles have been a mediocre team for a month and a half. You can look at it the same way with Atlanta.
Oh,
the Atlanta Braves lost a game yesterday that is Mets-like in every sense of the word. They blew a huge lead to the crappy Colorado Rockies. It's still all right in front of them, but they missed out on an opportunity to not only build a lead on Atlanta, but cut into the Phillies lead.
Yes.
Because they've played like garbage for a while.
They continue to look awful. You're absolutely right. Which is why, you know, anything chasing Philly, and I know Lou Gehrig brought that up, that's preposterous. Just worry about keeping Atlanta at bay. But somehow for Atlanta to escape that weekend a half a game up on the Mets, feel so robbed of everything the Mets built up. How do you not take advantage? And that's exactly where we are. By the way, I don't know if you heard the Michael Tonkin audio yesterday. He did say, hey, after leaving the Mets, one thing's obvious. They only have one good hitter you need to worry about.
You waited all weekend to drop that one in there?
Apparently it didn't hit the way I had hoped.
No.
I practiced out on the train four times.
You're looking for your revenge on Luis Severino's comment.
Here's the I might as well play crickets, Rosenberg. Thank you.
Here's the only revenge you need when you're the Yankees. Go win your freaking division and go watch the Mets flounder. That's your revenge?
Yeah.
You don't need to take shots. By the way, I didn't even like when Luis Severino said that last month.
I
told you I didn't like that.
I set it up. I found Tonkin, played for the Mets. Nobody liked it. Whatever, move on. You got four more hours of bad jokes coming your way.
You picked Michael Tonkin also to deliver it.
Yes, exactly.
Here's the reality. It's a long baseball season. It's a long-ass season. It's 162 games. Both teams have come off a stretch that's disappointing. But here's what both teams have in common. And I'm sorry, I hate to use this quote, but I like wise quotes, especially from people that have accomplished so much. And I need to quote the great Aaron Boone.
Ooh.
It's all right in front of us.
Oh, no!
It's all right in front of us! It's all right in front of the Yankees. You're essentially tied with the Orioles in the American League East. They've been a bad team for a month and a half.
And you guys better figure it out because you got Baltimore quick.
I know. Next week. It's all right in front of us if you're the New York Yankees. Sure, you went 5-4 against crappy teams. It's all right in front of you. Same for the New York Mets. Yes, they went 4-6. Yes, they got annihilated by the Mariners. Yes, they got outscored like 24-1 in a three-game series. Yes, Pete Alonso is hitless since he hit the two home runs in Colorado. Yes, J.D. Martinez is flailing at sliders low and away, but it's all right in front of us. I got to give Aaron Boone credit. As much as he said that while the Yankees were struggling, and it bothered you, and it bothered every Yankee fan out there, it's so true. It's one of the truest quotes I've heard.
It's a cop-out answer because the moment it stops being right in front of you when you're eliminated, everybody goes to vacation. Which, by the way, it should be noted, Evan, you're back. I'm going to be away again next week. We all still remain. We have not made vacation plans for October.
How are you feeling confident, Tommy?
I'm feeling great. So I think
you're feeling great.
I think
they just got annihilated by the Mariners. You could at least say, I'm still confident, but I don't feel good today because I just got shoved in the locker by Bryce Miller and Logan Gilbert.
But is not in positive Tommy's vocabulary unless I'm talking about the Olympics. I'll just say that. I would say this. They had a good road trip, all things considered.
They didn't have a good road trip.
Four different cities.
They didn't have a good road trip.
four different cities.
Tommy, let's just start right there. They did not have a good road trip.
No, they did.
They just got swept by the Mariners. Okay. They went 4-6. That's not a good road trip. Now, if you want to say they avoided disaster, yeah, they avoided disaster. But you cannot utter they had a good road trip. I have to fact check you.
You could have said it could have been worse.
Yeah, of course, it could have been. We do instant fact checks around here. You cannot say it was a good road trip.
All things considered, four different road trips, including going to Colorado where the air is thin. I'm saying, and then they hit Seattle. They looked a little out of gas over the weekend, I will say that. But I think it was a good road trip.
It was not a good road
trip. They're a half a game out of a wild card spot. You said it going in, they needed to survive. Mm-hmm. So if you want to say good, survived, however you want to say it. I thought it was a good road trip. I took offense to something you said, though, about 10 minutes ago. They faced three guys this weekend, top 25 in ERA. So they did face good starting pitching at the back end of a long road trip, four different cities, multiple time zones. They got jerked around.
Tommy, I want to make something clear about the Mariners, okay? A team that, before this season started, I actually picked to go to the World Series. So I have nothing but respect for Seattle. I really do. I like them. And I would agree that if we're ranking starting pitching staffs, 1 through 5 in Major League Baseball, like the depth of a staff, I would say the Mariners have the deepest pitching staff in Major League Baseball. I agree with you. No one is besmirching that the Mariners don't have a good staff. What bothers me is the talk like it's Maddux and Smoltz. They're not. Well, they have a bunch of good starting pitchers, but the Mets should not have been annihilated the way they were annihilated over these three games. So do not turn this into the Mariners are good. Yes, they're good. But can't score one run in three games against three starting pitchers. This isn't Maddux and Smoltz. I'm sorry.
You're not wrong. And also, I know positive Tommy and plenty of Met fans. What was the calling card for the Mets to revive their season? It was look at how we do versus some of the game's best starting pitchers.
They've done great against
including,
them.
You know, hitting the crap out of Gerrit Cole and Luis Hill.
Dylan Cease earlier this year.
So suddenly that calling card of the Mets, you can't suddenly backtrack when you lose to the Mariners in the way you did and say, well, what are we supposed to do? Look at their pitches.
And not only that, Sean, here's the deal with Major League Baseball in 2024 and where this Met team is. If the Mets are going to make the playoffs, if the Mets are then going to shock the world come postseason time, there's only one way they're going to do it. They're going to mash you. That's it. That's the formula. They're going to score runs.
Oh, boy.
They're not winning games 1-0 or 2-1. In fact, look at this season. How often have they done that? The answer is they don't. So the idea of, well, you just got to tip your hat. These are really good starting pitchers. It happens. If that's the case, they're done. If that's the case, they're not making the postseason. Now, I have faith because of something Sean brought up earlier, which is they have had a good track record against good starting pitchers. That was one of the calling cards when they were playing well in June and July. But I don't want to hear this excuse about, well, you know, they're the Mariners. You know, Sandy Koufax faced them on Friday night. Enough.
No, but when did they face him? They faced him after a long road trip where they had to make a pit stop in St. Louis, which is unorthodox. So they caught a team that had a little more pep in their step, a little more energy. First time Sunday Night Baseball was there in, I don't know, 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
So you had a team that had a little bit more energy. Mets were at the back end. You just said it, Evan, when you got back. You were on vacation last week, but not really. So the Mets were on a long road trip. They were a little out of gas, and they ran into three top 25 guys with ERA, and they mowed them down.
By the way, I would admit that I think baseball players probably enjoy being on the road, too. They get away from their wife and kids.
But let's not pretend St. Louis is the moon, either.
But it's got to affect you a little bit with the time zone. We saw it when they got back from London. We've seen this team have a little bit of jet lag. They're back at home now. The bats will wake up. They're facing inferior teams in Oakland and Miami.
But who does Oakland know well who's on the mound tonight?
Paul Blackburn tomorrow.
And not only that,
the Oakland A's have been a better team than the Mets and the Yankees over the last month and a half. Look it up. The Oakland A's have been a good baseball team. Like, we look at them as, like, dog crap because of their overall record. The Oakland A's have played well for a month. And, oh, by the way, whenever I hear the Mets are playing bad teams, that also makes me cringe. They do terrible against bad teams. What's their record against the Marlins this season? It ain't good. So, look, it is all right in front of them. The Mets have a chance, much like the Yankees have a chance, to erase the Big D, which is the disappointment of the last week. Because the Mets had the Big D in their 10-game road trip. I think the Yankees had the Big D over this 9-game homestand. And the good news, to quote the great Aaron Boone, it's all right in front of us. How are you feeling, Met Yankee fans? We'll get your calls 888-808-1019. Plus, sometimes like in the movie Rocky, you lose but you really win. And sometimes you win but you really lose. Why yesterday's Yankee victory is causing wide panic. panic amongst Yankee fans in terms of how they won. While I was away, I had DiGiorno pizza because, you know, what are you going to do?
What do you mean, what are you
going
to do?
What are you going to do? We weren't going out to dinner. So I had DiGiorno pizza. And the DiGiorno pizza had the stuffed crust.
Yep.
And what I do not understand about America or my great city of New York City is how come the stuffed crust pizza has not taken off to where that is like the commonplace pizza.
It's too much.
Why is it too much?
Look, you know me. I think I still remain the resident fat slob on this show.
Yeah.
You know, that is a very, very much, I've had too many beers, or dare I say, had something else, or the kids love it a little much. The problem with the stuffed crust is, on a good pizza,
mm-hmm.
the cheese and the sauce and everything is already really good. The stuffed crust pizza is made for companies that don't have better quality initial pizza to leave you with something standing.
You may be right, but if the pizza's great, like we have in New York City,
it would take away from it.
No, it wouldn't.
Yes, it would.
It would still be like the topper. It'd be like the dessert. It would be like the happy ending to the pizza eating.
No, first of all, I don't know why I said first of all, because there's like 40 things I could go down here. If you really love the pizza, you know what you want more of? More of it. The moment you start having stuffed crust, you're going to get fuller quicker. I would rather have 2 to 3 slices of pizza, enjoy everything on the pizza, mm-hmm. than get filled up by packing it out with extra mozz and a stuffed crust.
You know what I think I need to do, or someone here in this fine city needs to do, like one of the elite level local pizzerias?
Do it?
Stuff the crust with the cheese. And let me have like a really, because you are right, like no offense to DiGiorno's, it is what it is. It's frozen pizza. Like, it got the job done. But I'd be curious to have the stuffed crust connected to an elite level pizza and see how that changes the pizza experience.
Fat. You never feel really full after like mozzarella sticks? Like that's what it is. You're just expanding cheese like that.
Well, what's wrong with that? I don't see the issue.
There's nothing wrong with that, but if I'm sitting down for like a nice quality pizza meal, like a really good, I could taste all the seasoning on it. I don't want the filler of the stuffed crust.
All right, we'll get to your calls in a second. 888-08-1019 and why yesterday's Yankee victory left many a Yankee fan pissed off and angry. But let's kick it off.
Not McMonagle.
Why was he happy?
Oh, God, yeah, please. I think he put Clay Holmes in the Hall of Fame after yesterday. on that later.
He did get like a 4-out save or a 5-out save, whatever it was. Chris is out in Michigan. What's up, Chris?
Evan, welcome back to your quote-unquote vacation.
Thanks.
And Sean, welcome back, man. My condolences. Nothing but love your way, buddy.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, guys. So I know it's a little loud in here. I'm building these trucks here. I just got to say a few things, and then I'll get to the last thing I want to say. First off, my finger is in the air because I am acknowledging my tribal chief, Tommy Lugauer, because he said exactly what I wanted to say, which was, yes, the road trip was not great. It didn't go how we wanted
it. That's not what he said. He said it was a good road trip. He didn't say that.
Okay. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm hearing things with my ears here.
Stick the finger in your ear and clear it out.
Tommy said we ran into Seattle at the end of this road trip, and that was my main point. We ran into the best team of that road trip at the end. We did do a lot of traveling. The Midwest isn't really where we were out when we went to Seattle or when we went to St. Louis. So I do think that played a little bit of a role. Not trying to make a whole lot of excuses, but I got this in my head where I could see at the end of the season, the Yankees are going to play Baltimore and win the division. And I got a feeling, I mean, if the Mets get hot, they could do that when they play Philly because that's who they end the season with. It would be great for the city, and I would love to see it.
Chris, it's like 6 years from now. I mean, honestly, when I think about the September schedule, that feels like 9 months from now.
Not really, dude. Two weeks away.
You're right that it's soon. What I mean in terms of baseball, it's a long ways away. Like, they have 9 games coming up in their own building against Oakland, Miami, and Baltimore. They then have an incredibly big test out west against San Diego, Arizona, and then in the central time zone of Chicago. By the way, my math is correct, that's 3 different time zones, or 2 different time zones, technically. But that's multiple time zones.
Arizona needs to cut the nonsense. Nobody has any idea what time it is in Arizona.
I get confused by Arizona.
Figure it out. How do you guys get to opt out of daylight savings, by the way? Who makes that call?
I think the local government does.
That's why you vote.
But that's exactly why you vote. The most important thing to vote for come November is how they're going to handle daylight savings. I mean, my God, can we fix this already? But when you talk about a series in September against the Phillies, it's a million years from now.
it's not, though.
But it is in baseball terms.
But you just look how quickly the Cubs just rattled off 8-10. Like, that 2 weeks is going to go by like this, and you're going to be sitting there.
But, Sean, you could also lose 10 out of 12 and bury yourself.
Sure, like, you can.
The Yankees and Orioles are a little bit different. I'll tell you why. And you could quote me on this. I would be very surprised if we're sitting here for Yankees-Orioles in late September and there's a gap between the two teams that's significant. Like, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I agree. I think I said this 2 months ago. Spoiler alert, it's coming down to that series.
And I agree with you. And I think most sane people would say, you're probably right. Now, yes, it's still baseball, but I don't think anything extreme is going to happen between Baltimore and New York that's really going to change the complexion of the American League East in an extreme way.
Also, did Jackson Holiday have to be good?
Now he is. He just needed to be humbled a little bit.
Damn.
But the Philly series for the Mets in late September, mid to late September, like, a million different things can happen.
Sure.
They could be buried by that point. We may not even be paying attention. Well, I would because of the Rico.
The Phillies could be in load management zone.
They could be. So, like, I can't even think that far ahead. Carmelo and Freehold. What's up, Carmelo?
Hey, how you doing, guys? First, I want to say thank you for last Thursday. You added a whole other layer of my viewing experience with the movie Titanic for pointing out the lyrics of Celine Dion's song.
Carmelo, full disclosure, Evan and I were not here last week. You just broke that news to
us. What happened, Lukey? Explain it to me, because I was checked out.
All right, I'll try to do this very quickly here. So, McMonagle, I did the show with him. Chris is always mad at Rose Dawson because when she dies at the end of the movie,
right. She
sees Jack and not her husband. What I explained was is that Rose Dawson did not die at the end of Titanic. She's in her sleep. Look at the first lyric in the Celine Dion song that was so famous from that movie. Every night in my dreams. Uh-huh. She's sleeping. She sees Jack every night. The Chooch husband, it was no disrespect to him. I'm sure when she did die, she gets reunited with the husband. Uh-huh. So, Mello, you're welcome.
And you were talking Titanic because of the Mets?
So you're 0-2, you're 0-2. So okay. You might get the third one.
Can you, Carmelo? Hold on 1 second. Break the glass. We have breaking NFL news. Hassan Reddick has requested a trade from the New York Jets.
Oh my god!
That is according
god.
To Ian Rappaport. And look, this comes down to, and it's funny that it happened today on August 12th of all days, because when this holdout began with Hassan Reddick, I said to Tiki Barber, "I'm not worried yet." Holdout's a holdout. Tell me when it's going to affect him at the start of the season, and then I'll start to get worried. And Tiki said, okay, it's usually about 3 weeks before a season starts. And I remember I picked a date with Tiki. I forgot what the date was. I didn't write it down, which is a big mistake. I've got to write down dates. But I think the date was somewhere around now, where if he doesn't show up to camp now, I will start to be worried about, hey, eventually he's going to play, but what kind of condition is he going to be in? The other aspect of worry just popped up, which is Hassan Reddick is going into nuclear mode, which is, if you're not going to give me my contract, which the Jets apparently are not interested in doing, I'm never going to show up and I'm going to make things uncomfortable for you. Right now, he's demanded, or I should say, requested a trade. The biggest question for Joe Douglas, instead of looking back to April saying, dude, what the hell were you doing? Did you have discussions with his agent? Or the stories that have come out that Hassan Reddick changed his mind and he was willing to play on the final year of this deal? Like, was it even true? My big question for Joe Douglas is, what are you going to do now? Are you actually going to take the ultimate loss and trade this guy away for 5 cents on 100, or whatever that phrase is? Or are we going to continue this standoff, which has now taken a turn into a little bit uglier because of his trade demand?
First of all, I think you still have to look back before you look forward. And I think there is ultimate arrogance that has plagued this Jet team and the building of a roster. Evan, whatever happened, we'll probably never know. But I think, to me, one thing is clear. The Jets having Aaron Rodgers, and I think all the benefit it's brought to it, has given Joe Douglas specifically a little extra swag that the Jets are an attractive team to play for. And I guess he probably ultimately felt, no matter what, let's make sure we get the trade and get him here. We will figure out the contract and the tiebreak will be, he's going to want to be here because we think we're a Super Bowl contender. And I think that's backfired immensely. Hassan Reddick was already on a team that was a Super Bowl contender, and the guy just wants to get paid. But to take 5 cents on the dollar, that would really suck and really be a...
I'm not doing it. I'll tell you right now, I'm not trading him.
But at the same time, Evan...
I'm not trading him.
How many of these assets have you poured into Will McDonald, Jermaine Johnson? You should have belief in some of these first-round picks you had that the Jets shouldn't need a Hassan.
But they also lost Bryce Huff in free agency. They traded John Franklin Myers.
Like, but shouldn't the elevation of Will McDonald have replaced Bryce Huff to begin with? Sean, I wouldn't have made this trade to begin with.
Well, that's different. They shouldn't have made the trade, if that's your overall point. What I would say right now, because look, I don't know what happened back in April. If Joe Douglas is being a responsible general manager, and I'll say this about Joe Douglas, I'm not sure if it'll be with us or it'll be with the morning guys tomorrow. We're going to Jet camp.
Assume we're not getting Reddick.
We're going to be at, I can tell you that. We're going to be at Jet camp. The morning guys will be at Jet camp. And usually one of us gets Robert Saleh, the other one gets Joe Douglas. So Joe Douglas will, in all likelihood, unless he's going to chicken out, is going to be on this radio station tomorrow. And one thing that's very important, it fortunately is looking back, is to say, where did this go wrong? Like, did you, as you laid out, arrogantly trade for a player, assuming he'll be happy? Right. When you're right, he left a team that was a perennial Super Bowl contender. Right. Obviously, he wanted to get paid. Now, the story that Connor Hughes has put out there was that the Jets and Reddick were on the same page. And then something changed. Right. And I don't know if it's Hassan Reddick changing his mind, saying, screw it, I don't want to play on a one-year deal. I don't want to prove my value and then go get all the money. Like, I want it now. I've earned that in my NFL career, which, by the way, he has every right to do. Something changed, or Joe Douglas was completely ignorant.
Now, I don't know if it's going to be 5 cents on the dollar compared to what you traded him for. If you find a team that's willing to obviously offer the extension, but you say you wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't do it. No.
This is where I disagree with you, what? Evan. Do I have to be the bearer of positive news to Jet fans? The last thing the Jets need right now, after everything they went through in a throw-it-away year the first year Aaron Rodgers, is a glimmer of a distraction.
Is it really a distraction, though?
Well, I think if you're constantly being asked about it, he's not in the room, and you're getting public stories about this, the focus needs to be on the guys who are actually in the room, on the field.
Yeah, but does this affect Jermaine Johnson? Does this affect Will McDonald? Does this affect anyone on defense when they ask him, hey, what about Reddick's contract?
So then, to me, anything that ever comes out that we always call a distraction for any team is not actually a distraction.
No, I think in the NFL, and you could ask Tiki about it because I know he's mentioned it, when it comes to, like, personal contracts, when it comes to that, it's not a distraction. It's not going to cause Sauce Gardner to drop a pick six. It's not going to cause any kind of distraction. So the reason why my reaction to this trade request is to tell Hassan, too bad you're on the New York Jets, is whatever you're going to get back is not worth the possibility that at some point he says, hey, I'm just going to show up because the best way to get paid is to play, which is the reality.
But if he doesn't, if he really pulls a Le'Veon Bell, which would be a mess for him, forget what he's thinking.
Exactly.
He could make that mistake for himself.
Okay, so then what did the Jets lose?
Here's what the Jets
lose. As compared to what? A sixth-round pick they would get back?
It's not about the pick.
What is the big deal?
The Jets are about to operate in a season where we all feel should be a legitimate playoff contender. We'll worry about the next steps after that. They need all the flexibility or at least the understanding of where they're at roster-wise. They've had a problem at center in camp. They've had a problem. Guy goes down with injury. Maybe, it's a corner. They want to sign Stephon Gilmore. They need to know what they need to operate. And they can't have Hassan Reddick showing up like Chris Jones did in, week two. But if it's later, week six, seven, eight, whatever.
Well, why can't they? If he goes out and contributes, why can't they?
Because I'd like to know if he's really going to sit out all year, it's only going to hamstring the Jets financially.
I'm not trading him for a sixth-round pick. Like, I understand that's what you want them to do. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm not sure it'd be a sixth-round pick. Maybe you'll find another taker for a fourth-round pick.
And by the way, even if it is a fourth-round pick, what does that do to help the Jets now in this season and in this moment?
This is helping the Jets now?
I'm not saying it is, but getting back a future draft pick doesn't. I'd rather play this game further and say, all right, Hassan, too bad. We're not trading you.
With all due respect to Hassan Reddick,
and they should be negotiating
with
him.
He's not Joe Klecko either. I mean, the Jets will be okay without him.
But
on
no one's saying he's a Hall of Famer, but what we are saying is they're better if he's out there. So why would I just give in? Just because the player asks for a trade, you've got to say yes? Why?
No, I mean, the Niners aren't giving in right now to Ayuk, but...
They haven't yet. The Niners are also seriously trying to re-sign him, and that's my other question for Joe Douglas. Are you attempting to bridge the gap and get a deal done? Or is your attitude, I don't want to give the guy a long-term contract, he hasn't played a snap yet for the New York Jets, and so the only negotiating you can do is to somehow enhance this 1 year left on his deal to get him to show up. Which, by the way, is what I would try to do to get him here. That's what I would try to do, but the one thing I would not do is trade him. Honestly, what the hell does trading him do?
Trading him just rid yourselves of a mistake you made. The great general managers have to admit their mistakes and move on, not cling on.
How do you know it's a mistake if he shows up week three and plays well?
Oh, then it wouldn't be a
mistake. Do you think he's holding out the entire season?
Look, I think...
Answer that question. Do you think he's holding out the entire season?
I think there's a chance he could, yeah.
Okay.
That's the risk you take.
So the biggest negative is...
I'm not telling you that'd be good for him or smart for him, but I think he's just crazy enough to do it.
But play the risk-reward game with me. Yeah. So let's say he holds out the entire season. it's a sunk cost. You gave up a pick for him. He doesn't play. The whole thing sucks. Okay, I agree. But the best case scenario and the most likely case scenario is at some point, despite being upset, he shows up and plays football. It is unlikely he's going to hold out an entire season. And if he comes back and plays football, does that make the New York Jets better?
Sure.
The question is yeah. Or the answer is yeah.
Look, you can
why would you be okay with just saying, oh, you know what, he wants a trade. Let me get him out of here. How'd you do that?
First of all, in my experience, outside of Michael Strahan in 2007, I normally don't like aligning myself with guys who come to camp late after holdouts like this. I think you're screaming for a pulled calf, a pulled injury.
Darrell Revis, when he held out, I think missed two games or three games that season and was overall pretty damn good.
Okay, and there's examples the other way. I'm just telling you, Evan, if I'm the Jets, I don't look at, okay, he can make the team better. The defense was already great where you could begin with. I want full steam ahead. No, you don't want to be here. You don't got to be here. Let's get rid of him. No distractions. The Jets need to focus on football, not any of this other
stuff. This is not a distraction.
Okay.
Who's it a distraction for? Us, because we're talking about it? You think there's a distraction in the room?
You don't
right
think now? Robert Saleh be asked about Hassan Reddick every single week he's up there?
And how does that affect the way
it's
they play?
It's just another thing that he's got to stress about and worry about. The team and the coach need to worry about who's on the field.
Does it affect the players on the field? Will it hurt? Not just not having them on the field, that's obvious, but will it affect them on the field? The answer is no. Like, this whole distraction thing, it's a distraction to us, yeah. It's a
distraction for the coaching staff and the front office.
It's a distraction when Robert Saleh has to answer questions about it. Okay, fine. Is it really worth trading him away to get back nothing, essentially? Just so you could say, oh, we rid ourselves of a distraction? So Robert Saleh doesn't have to get angry texts from Joe Bedingo? That's not worth it.
Call his bluff. I don't know if Robert will answer. Call his bluff. Let Reddick sit out every game, and I think he'd be an idiot to do that. But ultimately, if he doesn't come back, now you're sitting there, you know, hamstrung. Tyron Smith gets hurt, this one gets hurt, and suddenly you're like, can I afford to sign this
guy? Well, if that scenario happens, because basically what you're trying to say is the reason they should trade Hassan Reddick is because you're really concerned about the salary cap.
No, but that's true. That if I signed him. If you're leaving a set amount of money aside, or you need that money if you ultimately do want to sign him long-term, you could really screw yourself in the operation of flexible
roster.
You
act as if the salary cap isn't fungible, to quote the great Tiki Barber, where you can restructure, or you could trade Hassan Reddick down the road.
Look.
If he continues to hold out, sure. Could this be a different discussion before the trade deadline in October? Fine. But in the middle of August, I'm calling his bluff.
Okay.
There is no way I would just kowtow. Is that the phrase? Kowtow. I'm not just going to kowtow to him and say, I have to trade him. Because he's unhappy.
At the end of the year, when you're inevitably disappointed about how the Jets season turned out, just put this. It'll be another log on the fire to everything Joe Douglas and his team is screwed
you
up.
You hate the Jets. Better.
Thank you, Joe. You're right. Yeah, of course. If it doesn't work, look, it's already not working out. No one's defending Joe Douglas for the decision around Hassan Reddick. What I'm saying is I'm about the moment. Okay, it just came out that he demanded a trade. I'm telling you I wouldn't trade him.
Okay.
That's my response. I'm not defending the idea that they traded for him in April. Have I done that?
No.
Have I defended him?
But
have I said Joe Douglas should have done a better job of communicating with Hassan or his agent, or something funky happened in translation over the last month and a half? Yes, this is a major F-up. But now you can only worry about this moment.
Okay.
And in the middle of August, I'm not just saying, oh, fine, Hassan, where do you want to go? Just give me the list. Oh, you want to go? Oh, Buffalo? Sure. We'll send you there.
You've already let it go this long without finding a way to make a deal after a guy traded for you. Now he's demanding a trade. To me, I think the Jets have long lost this. To the idea that you think it's going to be salvageable now feels like a colossal.
How do you think it ends?
I think the Jets are going to trade him.
You think they're going to give in?
I think they're going to give in.
I'll tell you why I don't think they're
going to
trade
him. And I don't think that would be idiotic by Joe Douglas. I think that's just in the GM acknowledging he made a mistake.
I'll tell you why I don't think they're going to trade him. And this is just a prediction now. Because obviously my opinion is I wouldn't trade him. The reason I don't think he's going to trade him is that this is not the first time a New York Jet player requested a trade. In fact, it's almost a yearly tradition. I don't know if you guys remember this. It's like a yearly thing at Jet Camp. Whether it's Denzel Mims or it's Elijah Moore, usually it's distressed wide receivers demanding trades.
Well, and guys you had already drafted, not guys you traded for in the same offseason. It's a little different.
This is on another level. Well, how often has this ever happened? Literally in the history of the NFL, where you trade for a guy, can't work out a contract, and before he ever plays for your team, is demanding a trade.
99% of the time, the contract's agreed upon the time you trade for him.
Usually.
Brian Burns.
Like, this is a new level Jet-esque moment. There's no doubt. Like, they trade for a guy, and before he ever plays for them, he's saying, all right, I'm out. I don't want to play here anymore. So, yes, you could put that in the storybook of same old Jets if you like to keep that book. No question about that. But my point to you is, I forgot my point now. Hold on a second.
Your point is you're starting to sound like positive evidence.
I'm not positive.
What's, I didn't say it's going to work out well. I said to you, I'm not trading him. Don't try to spin everything I'm saying.
I said
I wouldn't trade him. That's all I said. I would not trade Hassan Reddick because he asked.
You should be.
That's all I said to you. Did I like that Joe Douglas ended up being stupid and doing this whole thing? No, of course I don't like it. Has he had good bedside manner in this whole situation? Doesn't sound like it. But my point to you, I now remember it, is that when Denzel Mims and Elijah Moore, I get distracted because you piss me off. You're looking to poke me. What do you want me to say?
It's good to be back.
I know. I missed you for 8 days, and I want to punch you.
You still acknowledge me in that book and not McMonagle.
That's right. Say my name, bitch. He did not give in on those previous trade demands immediately.
Okay.
And in the case of Denzel Mims, he never did. And I think Elijah Moore was months later, if memory serves correct. Like, it didn't happen immediately. So the track record of Joe Douglas is that when somebody, and yes, they're different situations, they're also far less established players, no doubt about it. But when guys have said, I want to trade, the Jets over the last few years have not reacted by simply giving in and trading the player away.
Well, define immediately, because if I'm telling you, I think by the end of the show, they should find a trade for Hassan Reddick, I think no.
Okay, so my answer to that would be before the start of the season.
Okay, because I would look at that final cutdown day, find a team after they've ended all their preseason and go, we would like to sign Hassan Reddick long term, and we are willing to give you a third or fourth round pick for him. Then I think that could happen, and I think that probably will
happen.
So your
prediction as of right now is that the Jets will acquiesce,
little Labor Day
and Hassan Reddick
deal.
Will be traded, cut down couple of days right before the start of the season.
Labor Day weekend, and you will get a third or fourth round pick in return.
Okay, I'm writing that down. My prediction is that Joe Douglas is going to have some stones. He's going to stare down Hassan Reddick and his agent, and he's going to say, no bueno, I'm not trading you. And my prediction will be he will eventually show up, but now I'm starting to think it ain't happening anytime soon. Like, I used to think, oh, he'll be there middle of August. Now I'm thinking this will be a longer kind of holdout. But I do think eventually Hassan Reddick wears the jersey of the New York Jets and plays.
And there's one more fallout part of this to the audience and to you, the Jet fan. Do you even want to sign Hassan Reddick long term?
No, I'm not in love with signing him long term, no.
To me, you have the depth, you have the younger players, and that's why this trade was always perplexing to me. I understand filling the void left behind by Huff, but no, based on Hassan Reddick's career and where he's going age-wise, I wouldn't want to sign him long-term.
No,
anyway.
What I would want to do is somehow convince him to show up by throwing him some extra shekels, by giving him some extra motivation to rip it in a contract year. And I would then let him beast out. And then likely at the end of the season, I'll probably let him go. Now I'm open to changing my mind. The guy has a 17-sack season and is the Super Bowl MVP. Maybe we're talking about something very, very different. But my feeling from the beginning is I just want him to show up and have a monster contract here. And that position remains the same. So my prediction would be he will eventually play for the New York Jets. What's your prediction, Positive Tommy?
Well, in this situation, Evan, I can't be positive.
No, I'm stuck.
Unfortunately, I think Reddick will not play a game for the Jets.
Of course not.
He will ultimately be traded once Aaron Rodgers moves to Egypt or whatever by week 5. So Reddick, unfortunately, will not be a Jet this season. No positivity for me towards the Jets.
Yeah, not surprised by these answers.
No, and the biggest loser of the whole Reddick situation is Carmelo, who's been on hold now for 20 minutes.
Oh, my God, I totally forgot. Listen, we had breaking news. I didn't even get to the issues around the end of the Yankee game, which we will get to coming up right at 3 o'clock. But you know what, Carmelo? You have been such a good sport. You really have. So you know what? You're back on the air. I apologize. What the hell were you talking about again?
No worries. Thank you. There's a good bit of baseball left, and if the Mets win half their games, they're in a position to win, have 80-something wins, you know, which would be possibly enough to make a wild card spot. But I don't think I'm being another Mets fan who's looking for a nail to hit with a hammer or whatever it is that Tommy said last week. When I say that, the Mets have blown an opportunity over the last 2-3 weeks to gain some serious ground on the Phillies and take the first wild card spot with the way that Atlanta and Philly has been struggling. And over this last road trip, they hit 18 for 82. That's a .220 average as a team with runners in scoring position, including being shut out twice, not even getting a runner in scoring position in one game, and losing 6 out of 10. So I want to know, on what planet is that a good road trip?
Well, it's not a good. It's not. No. Carmelo. It's not about being negative or positive. And this is where Positive Tommy gets confused sometimes. Positive Tommy, or even positive me, would say, hey, I think the Mets are going to have a good homestand. I haven't offered that opinion yet, but if you put me on the spot, I actually would tell you, I think the Mets are going to bounce back. I'm not burying the Mets based on this road trip. But responding and analyzing what just happened
is not about being positive or negative. It's just about stating the facts. The New York Mets had a disappointing road trip. On no planet did they have a good road trip. And that's where positive Tommy's a little confused.
No, I'm not confused. I'm also not delusional Tommy, which is what people are starting to nickname me.
Wow.
Last night,
if the shoe fits.
Last night on
those shirts will be printed soon.
The whole reason positive Tommy exists is to uplift our fan base, to be that positive voice. And I felt last night that a lot of people wanted to give up. A lot of people wanted to say the season was over. So I just want to keep people's spirits high. And I still think, all things considered, four different cities, multiple time zones, the thin air in Colorado, you run into it.
Oh, my God.
You're still doing it.
You run into
the low pressure and the humidity? You have anything to do with it?
You run into a tough pitching staff there in Seattle. The weather was beautiful. It was amazing. First time on Sunday Night Baseball. I still think, all things considered, good road trip, half game out. You're at home. You're facing weaker opponents here. You do it. You go ahead.
Here, I want to give everybody a spoiler alert, because sometimes you can kind of see the future. If the Mets struggle against the Oakland A's, Tommy already had something ring in his head when I said it earlier in the show, and that's the A's have played really well for a while. Mm. That will be used later this week. Well, you know, the A's are a good team. Technically, they're one of the better teams in the American League over the last month. It's and the hangover from the road trip, they're still tired. Like,
he probably has a running diary, right, of all set up in
yes.
the series.
Would you agree that that is probably coming if things don't go well in this three-game series against the A's?
What I can promise you in the audience is I will continue to bang the positive drum no matter what. The other thing, too, is that everybody gets so hung up on you can't lose to bad teams. Good teams lose to bad teams all the time.
Okay, here's the problem with that. You're right, okay? You're going to lose to bad teams. The Mets have done, and this goes back to 2022, a terrible job against bad teams.
Right.
Like, they just have. I mean, those are the facts. Like, it still haunts me after the Mets beat the Dodgers late in 2022. It was going into Labor Day weekend when everyone was so excited about the soft schedule.
Yeah.
And they didn't play bad, but they didn't take advantage of it.
Right.
And this has been going on for a while. Like, yeah, no one's expecting that when you play a bad team, you're going to win 90% of the time. But the Mets don't do good enough against bad teams. I do want to comment on something Carmelo said. He said if the Mets win half their games, they'll make the playoffs. That's not true. They're four games above 500. Playing 500 the rest of the way and finishing this season with 83 wins is not going to be enough, in my opinion. Now, the Diamondbacks and Padres are at a 90-win pace. Do I think it's going to take 90 to make the playoffs? Maybe not quite 90, but I definitely think it's going to be in the mid to high 80s. Not mid, high 80s. Because even though Atlanta's playing horribly and they came off that terrible loss to Colorado, like, I think the Braves are going to get hot. The Giants have already gotten hot. So when you try to kind of do the math on this, Sean, I think 88 wins is the number they got to get to.
Yeah.
And that's finishing 14 games above 500. Right now, the Mets are four games above 500.
It feels like every playoff team is going to live between 96 and 88 wins, no matter where you are.
It really does feel that way.